Welcome to The Road Untraveled. I'm your host, Brian Hollins, and today we're joined by James Currier, general partner at NFX. James is one of Silicon Valley's foremost experts in growth and network effects and is a four-time serial entrepreneur. He's a pioneer in viral marketing, A/B testing, crowdsourcing, and a myriad of other growth techniques that tech companies have adopted for decades. We're also joined by Brittany Yoon, principal at NFX. Before becoming an investor, Brittany started her career at App Annie as their second product manager, then helped launch Uber to the Korean market. I really enjoyed learning more about the NFX platform and getting their take on community building and how network effects have evolved since NFX first began writing about them. We're closing in on our 30th episode of The Road Untraveled, so I wanted to give a quick shout out to Square, a major sponsor for The Road Untraveled and a team that none of this would have been possible without. For all my younger listeners out there, make sure you check out the Cash App. It's a peer-to-peer payments app, just like Venmo, but it also has debit card functionality and allows you to use funds from your account to make purchases from retailers or even withdraw cash from an ATM, so be sure to check it out. But for now, please enjoy our episode with the NFX team. This is The Road Untraveled. Hey, James and Brittany, how's it going?
Great.
Great.
Thanks so much for being here. Really excited to chat about all things NFX. Let's just dive right in. James, we'll start with you to talk about the origin of the firm and some of the things you guys are working on today.
Sure. So years ago, my buddies Stan Chudnovsky and Gigi Levy-Weiss and I had been running companies. Pete Flynn had been running companies for, 15 plus years and wanted to create some sort of a new venture experience. We'd gotten investment from great people for all of our different companies. We'd each started a bunch and together it started 10 companies and wanted to create something new and something that would be mostly about network effects, because we had come over the years to learn about how network effects, were the best defensibility and created the biggest outcomes. And we were real students of that. And so we came together around this idea and around the personality set and got together. And we first started as an accelerator, teaching other founders what we knew about it and invested in about 80 companies and then flipped over and became a venture fund, an early stage seed venture fund in 2017. And we invest $1 to $3 million for 15 to 20% of early stage companies, mostly software and biotech companies. And we've got offices in San Francisco, Palo Alto, and in Israel. And now we've just brought on our fourth partner, Morgan Beller, who was at Facebook and Andreessen Horowitz before. And so we're all good to go. And we've got Brittany Yoon with us as well, who's a principal, and Shaima in Israel. And so we've got a great investing team. And then we don't take salaries. So we use all of our management fees to pay a team. And we have a team of about 25 people that do software engineering and content development and all the finance and the PR and the recruiting and the helping support the companies that we invest in. So we're sort of a mini platform company.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'm a big fan of that platform you're describing. I'd love to chat a little bit more about it. Once transitioning over to the fund, how have you used the broader NFX platform to either source deals, identify founders, win deals? What are some of the things that you think NFX does differentiated today?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think our philosophy is more about sort of transforming the ecosystem. And so we build things and do things with that in mind. We've all been very successful in our careers as founders. And so for us, building NFX is about making a mark and about doing something that lasts. And so we think about using software to help speed up how all founders can meet all venture capitalists and get funded and innovate faster and build more startups. And so, for instance, we've built software like Signal, which is signal.nfx.com, which is a place for founders to go and find the right fit for them for investors, whether they're scouts or angels or solo, capitalists or VC firms. Over 10,000 investors have created profiles there and they're all interlinked. And so there's a network forming there. There's, tens of thousands of founders a month are using that. It's growing at about 10% a month. And we've built a thing called the company brief, which is, I think, a better way for founders to explain their business idea to any VC. And it's like DocSend, in which case you get a private URL that is then trackable, but it's specifically designed for showing a early stage company idea to an investor. And so it's got a lot of metadata and opportunity for you to put in a video of yourself and your deck and all that. And packaged up, it really helps you identify which VCs are going to be the best fit for you. as a founder. So these tools are out there. They're being used by a lot of people in the United States, particularly top founders who are trying to make things faster and easier for themselves. And that's one of the ways we've used the software to help change the ecosystem. And then, of course, we've got a lot of content that we publish, whether it's podcasting or videos or blog posts, you know, diagrams, checklists, all those sorts of things. And we've got a lot of commitment from the partners to produce that content along with the team, because we feel as if founders are more educated, if they are not making the same mistakes that we've made, they will go faster. They will be more investable, not only by us, but by everybody. And so, you know, our commitment is really to educate founders as much as we can with what we're learning or what we've already learned. And so we're putting a lot of effort into that. So that's a lot of the ways in which the platform comes into play in terms of helping the broader ecosystem. Then, of course, we use it to help the founders connect with each other. We've got software and systems for the founders to mentor and help each other once we've invested in them. We call it the guild. We don't call it a portfolio. We call it the NFX guild, because everybody in the guild is working on network effects businesses. And so they have a lot to share with each other, and they can really, really help each other out a lot. Somebody who is 3 months or 3 years ahead of you has a lot to teach you, and getting that support is really important. So we facilitate that with our team and with our software internally. And, you know, we help with PR, we help give them tracks for recruiting, we help give them tracks for their next fundraising event with their deck help and all that sort of stuff. So that's a lot of the ways the platform helps once people are inside the guild. But unfortunately, we only invest in about 0.3% of the companies we see, which is really the downside of being a venture capitalist, is saying no to founders.
Well, that's fantastic. And I too am someone that's in that Signal community and have found it valuable, both as an investor trying to meet founders, but also as an investor meeting other investors and finding like-minded folks who are looking in different spaces, and have really appreciated the value of that community. I'd love to dive a little bit further into network effects. I mean, until I started doing a little bit of homework on you and the NFX team, I really kind of only thought of network effects as being one thing, but you guys really kind of go in and identify and label the different types of network effects that are out there. I'm curious, just in your opinion, some of the ones that are gaining or losing favor, and kind of how you think about network effects in sort of a post-pandemic era.
Sure. So I think the big picture on network effects is that in the digital age, there's about four defensibilities. You know, in the olden days, you could have a port, or you could have a mine or something that would give you a defensibility in your business. But as it's become digital, we're down to network effects, embedding, scale, and branding. And network effects is the greatest of these. And if you look at the sort of creation of value in terms of market cap over the last 25 years, 70% of all the value in tech has been created using network effects in the core of a business, whether it's Facebook or eBay or PayPal. The ones we know typically have a big network effect. Now, Amazon doesn't. They're much more of a scale effect. And so obviously you can still build huge companies without a network effect. But in general, what we've seen over the last 25 years is that these network effects at the core of a business end up producing the outsized returns and a lot of the returns. So as focusing on that, if you're a founder, makes a ton of sense. Now, within network effects, it turns out that we've identified at least 15 network effects so far. We started out with a post about the 13 we knew about, you know, 2 years ago, and or two, 3 years ago, we posted about it. And I think the title of that post was 13 Network Effects and Counting, because we knew that there were going to be more. And so recently we've added two more. The ones we added were a tribal network effect and then an expertise network effect. And so in terms of the ones that are upcoming, I think some of the ones that are downgoing are typically physical network effects. So the first time that a network effect was identified was by the chairman of AT&T in 1907, when he wrote in his annual report that it seems like you should invest in our stock, because whenever we go into a town and we get 7 or 8 people using these telephones and we're putting in these physical things like a phone and copper wires, when a competitor comes along, no one wants to use their network because there's only 2 or 3 people on it. And so once we get going, it appears to that we're going to end up being a monopoly in every town that we start operating in. And so that was his argument for why you should buy his stock. And of course he was right. He did not use the word network effects, but we used it later on in the 60s. And so physical is really going away. You've got cable companies, you've got telephone companies, but there haven't been that many physical network effect companies built recently. I would say the same thing is true for protocols. So a protocol network effect is something like the Ethernet protocol definition allowed everyone to interconnect and send zeros and ones down wires to each other in the 80s, 70s and 80s. And once you define that protocol, then everyone can plug into the network. And the more people use that protocol, the more people want to use that protocol. Fax would be another example. I mean, people are still using fax today, in fact, because someone defined a protocol and you could define a better protocol, but no one's going to use it because everyone is already using the first protocol. Well, there haven't been that many protocols defined recently that have produced big companies. So I would say those are two network effects that are declining in usage for founders. And ones that are increasing are probably things like expertise network effects, where the best example would be something like QuickBooks, where if I learn how to use QuickBooks and then I go into a new job and they say, well, what tool do you want to use? I'm going to say, well, I want to use QuickBooks. And then that person learns that, oh, most of the accountants know QuickBooks. So if I'm going to pick a software package, I should probably pick QuickBooks because it'll be easier for me to replace my accountant with another accountant who will also know the QuickBooks platform. So Intuit has sort of stumbled into an expertise network effect that makes QuickBooks get more and more market share over time. So that I think is, you know, playing out more in the Jamstack, sort of developing of new websites. You're seeing a lot more developer tools use this expertise network effect to try to get more market share and to be more defensible. And then of course you see a lot more tribal network effects. People are aware that things like Lambda School, where people are having a pride in their network around Lambda, is similar to the pride that they have in their network around a Princeton or a Harvard, where I am going to purposefully help other people in the Lambda school, and their Lambda gets more powerful as a business because every new member of Lambda is purposefully helping the other member. And so Lambda can add more value to each of its new customers because the old customers are energetically helping and adding value to that customer, even when Lambda doesn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so I think more and more founders are tuning into the potential to build tribes around their businesses. But
yeah, it's fascinating. Let's talk about Lambda before it's Lambda, sort of your role in identifying these networks before they break out. Curious if there's anything that you've started to spot or ways that you'd advise other kind of young and budding venture capitalists on here on ways to identify network effects before they may be obvious.
It's interesting. Having studied the 15 that we've found, when I look at a company, I can see different flavors or different potentials to add network effects to the founders' approaches. Because I, you know, despite having published about this 3 years ago and talking about it broadly, I think the knowledge of it or the understanding of it is still quite low. And so I meet a lot of founders who have interesting businesses or interesting technology or interesting teams, and yet they're not applying some obvious network effects approaches to how they build the product and how they grow. And so I think more than identifying unseen network effects, I think the idea is to find great teams that aren't yet using them and then help them see how they can adapt what they're doing to a more promising and more potentially, you know, higher outcome approach to the product. And so that's really what our approach is to invest early at the seed stage and then help people do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about that role. It sounds somewhat operational in a sense. You as a founder, someone who's built and sold businesses in the past, you know, how do you think about competitive differentiation of someone like yourself who has experience building a company, operating a company, as you come in to try to win deals in such a competitive market versus the Fred Wilsons of the world who only have investing experience? What are some of the things that you really lean on as you look to coach and kind of champion founders that you work with?
Yeah. So first of all, I think the fact that there's so much competition among investors now is fantastic, right? Back when I was first starting in the business 20 years ago or so, prior to starting my startups, I worked at Battery as an associate, and I think there might've been 80 active venture capital firms at the time. And the disbalance of power was extreme at that point, and it caused a lot of bad behavior from investors. And I think that more competition has been really great for founders and will continue to be great. And I think you're going to see venture firms do all sorts of things, including like what we're doing, publishing, you know, content. You know, between us and Andreessen and First Round, like the amount of content that people are publishing to help founders is just you know, it's like you can get your MBA in this stuff. So yeah, I think it's great that there's so much competition. I think that when you think about differentiating, it's often a real connection that you have with the founder. I think, you know, really great founders are going to be able to choose the people they like hanging out with, the people who they think are wise, the people they want on their journey. I mean, we see these, you know, building these startups really as mechanisms for personal and self transformation, right? I mean, that's the journey that we're on as humans before we leave this earth, is we've only got a certain number of years. And so if you can take on a startup as a mechanism for you yourself as a founder to grow, then that's the greatest calling you can have, to become the greatest person you can be while you're here. And so that's a journey, and you should be really careful about who you take with on that journey, right? Be careful about your co-founders, be careful about your investors, because it's very hard to fire a co-founder. And unfortunately, it really is impossible to fire an investor. Like, you've got all these legal contracts and they hang around until the end. And so you have to be careful. And so, you know, we just put out content about who we are. We, you know, talk to just hundreds of founders a year. And, you know, if who we are resonates with them, and if what we know and how we look at the world resonates with them, then they should choose us. And if somebody else resonates with them, then they should definitely go with them. Because it's as a founder, it's your personal journey. It's your work of art. It's a unique thing that you're building. And so you should assemble the pieces that fit most with you. So that's how I think about it.
Oh, that's great. I'm curious if there's any qualities in founders that you particularly have an eye out for, whether they're building B2B, B2C, kind of horizontally, if there's an agnostic quality or two that you really look for. I'd be curious to kind of learn what that may be.
You know, I think that I look for a lot of the things that most people look for, just the intelligence and the tenacity and whatnot. I guess the things that would stand out most are probably, I look for someone who can take other people's perspective. So one of the, and that would allow them to understand themselves better. One of the failure modes I see a lot of founders have is they aren't self-critical enough, and they don't live in the shoes of the customer or the investor or the partner or their employee or their co-founder enough. Right, the skill of being able to see something as others see it allows you to be a better product builder, a better negotiator, a better mentor, a better leader. And if someone doesn't have that, I found that that's where we spend a lot of our time wrestling with the founders, trying to help them go through this personal transformation where they can take the perspective of somebody else. And they aren't afraid to talk about how things aren't going well, or they aren't afraid to really look at the problems that they're facing, rather than glossing over them, or, you know, trying to pretend to their employees that everything's great, or pretend to their board that everything's great. There's an authenticity that comes from being able to take the perspective of another person. And so I'm really looking for that authenticity, that ability to see. And I guess the other thing that I key on often is just speed, you know, so between sort of authenticity and being able to take the perspective of the person, that's a sort of psychological trait. And then speed is also a psychological trait, which is, can you make decisions quickly? Are you emotionally strong enough to move through uncertainty into action? You know, how little do you need in order to take action? Right? So we always talk about these personality types between the commandos, the soldiers, and the police. And the commandos come in, they just take the hill, they just make stuff happen. The soldiers, you know, bring in, you know, dirt roads and some electricity and sort of establish order. And then the police make sure nothing ever bad happens. And so for a founder should be a commando first and foremost, because they need to move quickly and just take action. And, you know, you'll see companies like Facebook, who continues to move quickly, continues to take action despite danger, as you know, they're the ones who are staying on top. So I'm always looking for speed as well, as a psychological state of mind.
That's great. Brittany, I would love to just give everybody a little bit of context on the programs you're working on and some of the exciting things that you're seeing.
Yeah. So I joined the VC side during the heat of the pandemic in late April. And what I've learned is that the transition into VC is very interesting. I've spent all my career in operating worlds. I was at startups like App Annie, Synac, and then at Uber for a while, and then went to HBS, and then I went back into startups. And I thought of these two worlds as very different, operating and then VC. And so, you know, transitioning into VC, I found that you need a different type of skill sets. And, you know, perhaps in HBS, there are students kind of exploring a lot of paths and maybe aspiring investors that we want to be thought partners with. And we want to, you know, open up kind of apprenticeship so that they can also grow to be world-class investors and leverage our networks together. So that's kind of a new project that we're working on at NFX, having MBA fellows that are a very small group, kind of top, you know, they're actually quite diverse backgrounds, not necessarily from investing backgrounds, some from operating world, some actually ex-founders who can be our thought partners and really eyes and ears on campus to help us sharpen our thinking that we can also help them kind of introduce to the world of VC if they're new to it. And that's kind of kicking off this year, which is really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's interesting that you jumped into a new role in the middle of a pandemic. Any advice you'd share for folks that are doing the same? I'm sure there's people now that it's not just a month or two, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have started a new job in the last, call it 6 or 7 months. Any advice on the things that have gotten you up to speed and some of the things you may have found helpful as you joined a team remotely?
Yeah, I think I talk about this a lot with people who similarly transitioned, you know, to new jobs during the pandemic. I think it's easy to get stuck in like the negatives of, oh, you know, I haven't been able to build a rapport with the team as much as I would have, or, you know, it's isolating. I think it's easy to have a narrative around the losses of what joining in a remote environment is, but I want to be a little bit controversial and present that there are opportunities for unique, I guess, benefits of joining in a remote environment, which is that A, people are a lot more available than they used to be. So whether you're reaching out within your company or outside of your company, people are just so much more willing to help. And I found this great sense of community build up in both within NFX. You know, I've connected with every single person basically on, and they're much more willing to kind of open up and be fully available outside of NFX. My kind of ex-operating background, people who have transitioned similarly into VC are much more available to talk about, you know, this is what I learned to be really helpful in my first year in VC, and just giving advice and building this sense of community. So I think there is a unique opportunity to build, kind of jumpstart your career in whatever, you know, path that they're transitioning into and utilizing the resources that we have available. So I would say that's one. And then I think two is it gives you more time to think and reflect. So I see VC as a lot of like learning on the go. You're constantly thinking and learning about new things, new companies, new businesses. And just by nature of having more time to think from the not having to do commute, I find that there's a lot more time for reflection and just being able to have people's, you know, I chat with James every week, and that I'm not sure if that's something that I would have been able to do if it was in a normal environment where we would have to, you know, travel back and forth. But I just appreciate the time that I get to have with people and you know, suck from their brains what their fresh thoughts are.
Yeah, that's awesome. Would love to also just get a little bit of your perspective as someone that shifted from operating to venture. You know, some of the things that you've seen, especially being in a place like NFX that's so good at building community, any way to build personal brand or advice you may have for folks that are trying to break into venture as they start to think about the things they can do ahead of an application, ahead of, you know, getting started in their venture career to help set themselves up for success.
Yeah, I think it's similar to what James was talking about, but knowing, I think self-awareness is really what's key. And something that I, you know, put as is very important criteria is a fit for the fund and my, you know, both personalities and values. And I just remember reading on the NFX job description where it was about, we're building a fund that we wish had existed when we were operators. And that's very much speaking to my, I guess, identity of, you know, I like getting my hands dirty and I like learning things by doing things. And I love getting in the trenches, and all those things were exactly what NFX stood for. So I think if I could give one piece of advice to people who are also transitioning, find someone who you want to be, who kind of really, you know, resemble you and are you're aligned with, both in terms of what they invest in and, you know, what type of sweet spot that they're looking for. And if that's the type of stuff that you like thinking about in your free time, but also like in the identity and like the value statement that they put out. You know, all the partners at NFX really makes it a point to speak with founders at like almost every week or every other week, and just wrestling the same problems that the founders are staying up thinking about. And that's why I really enjoy being in the operating world at seed or A stage companies and growing with them. So I think that's probably the number one advice, finding a fund that you can, you know, relate with and you feel like is really in tune with your ethos. And then second would be leveraging your experience, but also knowing that experience can be a bias. That's something that I've had to learn, that sometimes if I know more about a field because of my background, that's because one sample size or one you know, data point, that's not necessarily generalizable. So sometimes that can be, I think it can make me cynical and say, oh, you know, I've seen this and this is why it was really hard when I was fading with this at, you know, my old company. But that's just one data point. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to be the case. So experience can add expertise, but it also can be a crippling, you know, bias in some way.
Yeah, that's great. Last one for you guys. This has been really fun. I appreciate it. And I always enjoy ending on this because I think as an investor myself, a lot of companies can get buried in a portfolio. But James, maybe we'll start with you. I'm curious if there's a portfolio company in NFX that might not have the tech crunch and Forbes cachet, but one you're just super excited about that you think a lot of people might not have heard about or know too much about that you think, you know, in the coming years is going to be really exciting.
Oh, I don't know how much people have heard about Outdoorsy. They've done a little bit of PR, but it's like Airbnb for RVs. And it's a company that we seeded years ago. And in COVID, they've done incredibly well. And, you know, the number of people trying to rent an RV is like 35 million people a year in the US. And it's just a giant market that people underestimate its size. And the team's done great. And they kind of have a dominant position and a network effect going. And so I think, we're all going to be hearing a lot more about Outdoorsy.
All about the network effects. I love it. Yeah. Brittany, if there's one thing that you wish you knew when you started in venture, what do you think you'd share?
If I may, it's maybe that no one has a clear answer and everyone's trying to learn and get to the best understanding of a very nebulous, constantly changing thing. Because, you know, companies are constantly changing. People are constantly evolving. The market's evolving, so we can't know. And maybe that because of that, it's going to be a long walk in a small valley. So we may get some things wrong, but we hope to get a lot of things right. And we hope to build relationships longer term.
That's great. Well, James and Brittany, thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed doing this and big fan of the NFX platform and Signal and all the things you guys are building. So for anyone that hasn't had a chance to check it out, please do. And really looking forward to seeing the future of NFX.
All right, Brian. It's great. Great to
Thanks
talk
so
to
much.
You.
Take care. Bet.